Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Riley Sager. He is a best-selling author, and he is out with a brand new novel, Survive the Night. It is available now wherever books are sold. It was just a fantastic thriller. It took me about 4 hours one night to read this, and I sat up in the bed reminiscing about the 90s. I sat up scared, thinking about all kinds of things. It's a real thought-provoking novel, and Riley, I think you've crossed that bridge now. You're a writer. You're not just an author. You're a writer, because this is a fantastic piece of literature. But the thing I found interesting, it takes place in 1991. When I was a kid growing up in the 80s, I thought back to the 60s, 20 years before, and I thought that was the olden days. I think about 1991. That was 30 years ago. That's longer ago than the olden days when I was growing up. So why 1991 for this book? Because it worked well, but it's a long time ago.
It's a really long time ago, which is crazy because I was a senior in high school in 1991. And so to think, oh my gosh, it's been 30 years since then. I knew that this book had to be set in the past. You know, it's about this girl, this college student who's leaving school after her best friend is murdered. She meets up with a guy at the campus ride board, which was a thing back then, and it's crazy to think about now. But back then, strangers did, like, contact each other to get rides home. Right out of the gate, as soon as they hit the highway, she starts to suspect that this guy might be kind of shady, and in fact, he might be a serial killer.
Well, it's sort of a play on a closed universe book. I mean, this is kind of like the Clue game where, you know, everybody's in the one place and nobody changes. And so what's the trick to writing a thriller like that when you've just got essentially two characters in a car? The whole story takes place in one linear fashion.
It was a challenge, and I did it on purpose. I never like to repeat myself, and so each book is a new, different puzzle for me to solve. And in this case, the idea that first popped into my head was film noir Little Red Riding Hood. And I don't know why it popped into my head, but once it did, I couldn't get it out of my head. And so I liked the idea of this girl just trying to get home to grandmother, and she meets the big bad wolf, and he happens to be the one taking her home. It was a challenge in the fact that, okay, most of this book is going to have to be just two people in a car. And how can I try to wring as much suspense out of that situation as possible? And one of the things I came up with was to set it in the past where there were no cell phones, there was no GPS, you were at the mercy of a payphone if you could find one that worked, and it's just a whole different world in reality than what we live in now.
Well, I remember this era very well, and I remember the ride boards, and I used them when I was in college, because I was in college in the early 90s too. But when you have the girl in the car, and it's Charlie is her name, she's a film studies major, and so there's a lot of film references in here. And I always think it's interesting because it seems like whenever you have themes in books, you don't have anybody that's a literature major that refers to books. They're always referring to films. And so what is it about films that makes us understand literature so much more? Because I think a lot of people are going to read this and say, yeah, I remember Silence of the Lambs. I remember all of these Hitchcock films that you referenced.
Movies are really kind of an international language. Everyone goes to the movies. Everyone watches the movies. Everyone knows movies. Even if they haven't seen Psycho, they know about the shower scene. It's a great way to connect with readers through the page. Charlie makes a reference to a movie that she's seen, and so many readers are going to have seen that movie too and know exactly what she's talking about and think, oh, I understand what she's thinking right now. And so it's kind of an emotional shorthand.
She also has this condition where she sees movies in her mind. And I thought that was interesting. It took me back to, thinking of references, it took me back to Miss Saigon, the song from the Broadway musical, Movie in Your Mind. But the condition that Charlie has in the book, can you kind of explain that? Because I think it's a really interesting mental condition for somebody to have who's suffered trauma.
Yeah, Charlie's had a rough go of things in her life. She handles this grief and this guilt and this trauma by going all in on the movie viewing. And it started to sort of warp her sense of reality. Not all the time, but when things get super stressful for her, as a self-preservation mechanism, like, she just starts to sort of see life as if it's a movie, and she's in a movie. And so sometimes reality blurs with what she calls movies in her mind, which are actually hallucinations, basically. And it's a very, very Hitchcockian thing. You know, Hitchcock was known for his movies of always coming up with weird psychological ailments that, like, his heroines would have. And I thought that this would be a really interesting way to toy with reality and that maybe some of the things she's experiencing aren't really happening. And then to be in a car with someone who catches on that this phenomenon is happening and then might be trying to exploit it. So it just added this whole level of mind games to the plot.
There's also the theme in the book of that sometimes things happen that are just coincidences that may or may not have anything to do with reality. And we see this time and time again. Somebody goes missing and somebody made a comment like, I would do something bad to that person. The person that said that may or may not be involved, but nonetheless, you add up all these coincidences and pretty soon it can mess with your mind. This isn't just somebody that has mental illness that can experience this. This happens around the world with investigations, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. There's lots of there is a technical term for it, which I am completely... Is it false memory?
Perhaps.
Blanking. Where, yeah, like people... There are weird coincidental things, and there are people who remember things incorrectly. It can lead to a whole mess in certain cases, and it has.
I'm chatting with Riley Sager, the best-selling author, best-selling writer. He's got a new novel out. It's called Survive the Night. It is available now, and it's just a fantastic thriller to read during the summer. Riley, I love the fact that you named the university or the college where Charlie attends Oliphant, because I know you're a Pennsylvania guy, and that's a name in I think it's a city or a town in Pennsylvania, but it's a great name for a college. Where did that come about?
It actually came from the actor Timothy Oliphant.
Ah.
Because I knew that I couldn't name a real university because I don't think any university would want to be associated with some of the events of this book. And so when it comes time for coming up with names of things, you know, how do you name a college? Like, what's a good college name? And I was just sort of running through names in my head, and I think I was reading some kind of pop culture website and saw Timothy Oliphant and went, Oliphant University. Oh, yeah, that works.
And then was there a magical reason that you set it in New Jersey?
Because I live there. It was really, I live in New Jersey, but I grew up in Pennsylvania. So whenever I go home, I take Interstate 80 through the Poconos. That's exactly where this book takes place, is a road trip. Starts out in New Jersey, and they go through the Poconos, and craziness happens. I didn't need to do any research. I know that highway like the back of my hand, and so I knew that I was going to take it easy on myself with the research there.
Now, that's kind of a risky thing because you've been a writer long enough to know that people read this, and if you get one detail wrong, they're going to demand a fix in the next printing of this book. And so did you really not research any of the exits or locations? Because, I mean, it's like people that love their weapons. If you get a weapons thing wrong in a story, you're getting emails.
I didn't because I traveled that highway all the time. And also, a lot of the places, when they do eventually leave the highway, are completely fictional.
I got you. The music references you have in here are quite phenomenal, too. And to think back to some of these songs that I remember by heart to realize that they're that long ago. But when you think back to the music, was there any rhyme or reason as to some of the music titles that you picked for references here?
I really wanted to give a sense of where music was at in November of 1991. And you can't do that without Nirvana. One of the first scenes I thought of, two people in this car, each suspecting each other of things, as Come As You Are is playing on the tape deck. Once that got into my head, I knew I had to include it in the book. And I just tried to include music that I loved back then, but also evoked a certain mood. Like the music and the artists mentioned, The Cure, Susie and the Banshees, Depeche Mode, are very kind of moody types of music that would make a great soundtrack to this book.
Well, does it seem to you, because it always does to me, that the 90s may have been the last decade where there was a line of demarcation for being able to pick out a song? I mean, you play me any song from the 60s, 70s, 80s, or 90s, I can tell you what decade it's from generally. After that, it kind of all mixes together. Did you have that experience as you were looking at titles?
Yes and no. I knew because I listened to these songs a lot when I was in high school, and I still listen to them a lot today. So I knew, like, which songs. I'm like, okay, Kiss Them For Me by Susie and the Banshees, perfect. I have to mention that one. Just Like Heaven from The Cure, yep, that one's going in there. I think when you come of age in a certain musical era, you never, ever forget those songs. And then, like, 20 years later, you're like, I don't even know who the radio plays anymore or what these musicians are or what these songs are. And I think it happens to all of us. There are people probably, like, who graduated in 2010 who, like, can name every single song released in that year.
Did it amaze you, and it did to me as I was reading this, that thinking back to the things we used to do from getting rides from college or just how we behaved in college, how risky that is given from today's lens as you look back on it now, because to think about getting in a car with a stranger these days, you'd never do it.
Times have changed so much. I remember when I was writing this, I remembered a time when I was in high school and my car broke down. And it was like 11:30 on a Saturday night. I didn't have a cell phone to call anyone, so I had to walk to the nearest house, knock on their door at 11:30 at night, and say, "Hi, can I come inside your home and use your phone?" And they let, and we were just so much more trusting back then.
Wow, it's just a phenomenal look at a slice of American life that took place, and I think people will appreciate that as well as the story. It was just a fantastic thriller that kept me turning the pages. The book is called Survive the Night. The writer is Riley Sager. The book's available everywhere. Riley, just a fantastic thriller here. I enjoyed it a lot, and I thank you for joining me to talk about it.
Oh, thank you so much. It was my pleasure.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time. Come as you